Divine Mother, friend, beloved God, Jesus Christ, Bhagavan Krishna, Babaji, Lahiri Mahashai, Swami Sri Yukteswarji, beloved Gurudev, all saints, we bow to you all. Beloved God, beloved Guru, in the secret silence of our soul, teach us how to commune with Thee, to be ever at Thy side, to be receptive to Thy guiding words, to receive Thy all-inspiring divine love. Help us to be always receptive to Thy transforming blessings, to live, to move, to have our being in Thee and in our love for Thee. Om Shanti. Amen. I have been thinking so much about Master this evening. Perhaps it's because some of you devotees said, well, if you're going to give class, can't you tell us some experiences, some of your personal experiences with Master? You know, this is one of the most difficult, I find, one of the most difficult of all subjects to speak on. And I will tell you why, if I can tell you why. Just as it is said that in meditation or in your relationship with God, if you speak of those experiences which you have with God or of your deepest feelings for God, it is said that you lose something of that experience. And this is very true when we speak of our experiences with Master. True, there are many things that are for the ages. There are many stories which we have told you many, many times about Master, his samadhis, different things of this nature, which do belong to posterity. Many such experiences we all have related to you, born of the inspiration or the feeling at that moment, just as sometimes you will speak of your deep feeling for God to another devotee. If you feel it at that moment, it will inspire or help. But it is difficult to speak of those personal experiences, those personal instances. But I'm sure that this is why there are many, many untold stories of all of the great saints. For instance, the disciples of Christ did not relate in the Gospels that they knew they were leaving for mankind. They didn't relate all of their relationship with their Master, because there were some things perhaps that were meant for that devotee's welfare, and too, they were something that were so personal and sacred. I have been reading a story of Teresa Neumann. It relates some of her life and some of her visions and experiences, and it deals mostly with the main part of her experiences having to do with the crucifixion, the resurrection. It is said that she often had visions of incidents, glimpses into Christ's life during the time that he was here on earth. But of all of the visions related, there is one that particularly touched my soul. And it was because perhaps it reminded so much of Master and of the relationship that the devotee attains with his guru and with God. the kind of a relationship that you don't wish to talk about. It is said that Christ liked to go to the home of Lazarus, particularly when there had been some difficulty in his mission, when there had been some misunderstanding or something that pained him. Lazarus was a very wealthy person. He had a very nice home and was more than generous to his master. He always saw that they had very nice rooms to stay in. He always treated them with special care, special food and attention. And perhaps it was during those times that Christ felt being away from the multitude and with those who understood him, he could relax. Because sometimes it was said that the servants used to carry stories to the outside that made the outsiders say that there was great revelry or merrymaking going on in the house during those times of Christ's visit. In this particular instance, Christ and the disciples were visiting Lazarus, and until late in the evening, they were talking about those things that were nearest and dearest to the hearts of all of them. In other words, they had been talking of God all that evening. But they were not going to stay there overnight because Lazarus was expecting some guests to come. And so Christ didn't want to stay. He wasn't going to remain. So when they decided to leave, he sent the disciples back to the inn where they were staying, and the inn was owned by Nicodemus, and he had provided rooms for Jesus and all of his disciples there at that inn. And he sent all the disciples back to their rooms. He wanted to be alone. But John very much wanted to stay with the master, but out of obedience he followed the others back to the inn. But he couldn't get the thought out of his mind, this longing to be with his guru. So soon he got up, he left his room, he went out into the night, and he felt that he would find his master in the Garden of Gethsemane. So he went to the garden. She described it as a very bright moonlit night, and he had no difficulty at all finding his guru. And when he saw him there, he ran up to him. He couldn't restrain himself. He ran up to the guru and embraced him. And though obviously Jesus wanted to be alone, he couldn't resist that love, that pure devotion of his disciple. And so he went with John. They left the garden and walked together back toward the inn. And when they arrived at the inn, John began helping the guru to retire in his room. Jesus had a very nice private room. And it said that Jesus did not have his sandals on as he was walking through the garden and back to the inn that night. And his feet had become torn. They were covered with blood and spots. In other words, he had injured his feet in walking. And as John saw this, he began trying to take the blood off the feet by kissing them with his devotion. It said that Jesus just reached down. He reached down and took the disciple and pulled him up to his chest and held him there in that embrace of divine love from the devotion that he was feeling from the disciple. John didn't speak of that experience when he left the gospel for the world. Why? Because that's something that touches, so much touches the soul. Your relationship with God and your meditation, the deepest feelings that you have, you speak of it to someone else, you see immediately you've lost something. That is why when you are seeking God and you enter the spiritual path, it becomes a very interior life. No matter how active you are on the outside, and that activity is good for us, our association, our relationship with other devotees on the spiritual path is very good for us. because all of these things serve to make us a more balanced soul. Our soul, of course, is perfectly balanced. It is perfect. But its expression through the ego is very lopsided. I know years ago, perhaps you saw in one of the early magazines, Master had drawn little figures of the unbalanced person, too big a head, or one short arm and one long arm, or long legs and short arms. So this is really the way that we must look, in a sense, to God. Because our ego, our second nature, as it expresses, it is very unbalanced, it is very imperfect. And so work, activity, and especially association, relationships with other people, very much help to bring out what is lacking in our own nature. Because on the spiritual path, you cannot escape from your abnormalities. You are brought face to face with them day after day. That which irritates you most in others, that which is most difficult for you in your work, in self-surrender, and all of these things that are asked of us on the spiritual path, that which is most difficult for you usually means that it's because you lack some quality that is akin to that in your ego nature. And that will keep coming to you. It will keep rubbing you until, through those experiences, you learn to see yourselves as others see you, ultimately to see yourselves as God sees you, as your guru sees you, so that you can change yourself. But even though we are external, even though we work hard, even though we have many activities which require association, mixing with others, not only in work but in recreation, in enjoyable gatherings, in our meditations, still the life on the spiritual path essentially is a very interior one. And if one stays only on the surface and never creates that interior life, that interior relationship with God and with Guru, he entirely misses the point of the spiritual path. And sooner or later, as Master said, like a great Ferris wheel, that devotee moves to the outer edge and is thrown off. The interior life means an anchoring in God. In that interior life, that is the very basis, the sum total of what you are gaining on the spiritual path. That interior life is your relationship with God. You base it upon either a concept of the divine that you are seeking as father, mother, friend, beloved, or as some quality which your soul is longing for, love, beauty, wisdom, joy, peace. Whatever relationship, whatever concept you base that relationship on, that is for you personally. And as you go on developing that relationship, you will find that it serves really as an anchor. That is, that relationship becomes more real to you. That interior life, that interior communion with God, and that interior striving, wherein you are not only seeking and loving God, but you are analyzing, you are introspecting, you are striving spiritually to perfect yourself in those things which are revealed to you, not only from your inner communion, from your inner relationship with God and Guru, but from your external relationships and activities. But the changing that is going on within you is not external, it is internal. It has to be born in there first. In other words, there has to be a desire to change. When the desire is there to change and to become better, to be able to reflect that more perfect being, that soul which you really are, when that desire comes, then understanding begins to come. Understanding again comes from both without and within. That is, the causes, the stimulus for the understanding comes from both without and within. Because Our experiences and our relationships are all trying to tell us something. It's amazing sometimes how deaf we can be. Mm-hmm. We speak of turning a deaf ear. We do that all the time, every day, countless times during the day. Everything that happens to us is trying to tell us something. When the desire is deep to change, to realize God, to get out of this world of Maya and to go back to our eternal relationship, our eternal union with Him, then we find that the understanding, when something happens to us, instead of being suddenly on the defensive, we turn within. We seek solace in what is more real to us, the external thing that has happened. That is only a stimulus that's meant to do something inside. When that inner life becomes important and becomes real to you, you immediately find yourself going inside. And as soon as you get into that interior life, and you say to God, you say to your guru, what is it? What is it that you are trying to tell me? What is it I am to learn? Then understanding begins to come. Understanding begins to tell you, this, my child, is what you have to learn. You have to overcome this extreme sensitiveness. You have to overcome this extreme selfishness. You have to overcome this extreme tendency toward lack of self-surrender. You will always find answers, or you will always find the understanding, the guidance that you need once you have established that inner life. You only can establish it, of course, by meditation. As Master said, balancing your activity with meditation, and your meditation with activity. If you meditate deeply, if you strive in that meditation to make God something that you are not just thinking about, but something that is very real to you in whatever form or whatever quality most appeals to you at this particular point in your spiritual understanding and striving, then you will find that that relationship does begin. It begins to talk to you. How sweetly Master said to us, God does talk to you. He does begin to talk to you. But you have to be very silent. You have to be silent by meditation. And secondly, you have to be very receptive. Those ears do not get open so long as the ego is standing there and saying, but. There is this reason and there is that reason. Such and so did not understand. Or nobody really realizes how difficult this is for me because. Nonsense. We can't understand ourselves. We aren't meant to understand ourselves in a state of delusion. That's what delusion is all about. You only begin to understand yourself when you're able to step aside from yourself. When you are able in that interior life to completely put self aside and say, now this or that has happened, or this or that is troubling me, what is the answer? Where must I change? Not, Lord, change this circumstance. Not, Lord, change this person. Change your attitude toward me. But, Lord, where must I change? Ultimately, the devotee gets to the point where even that sense of I does not exist. You get to the point where at times and more often you can see it as though you were completely apart from it. The I or the you is not even identified with the problem or with the circumstance, because you begin to see it as God sees it, just as a play. And as you see it as a play, then you see, well, now this actor acting in this circumstance, what would be the divine way to respond? And you immediately have that understanding and the desire to respond in that way. That interior life is the only thing that you will find you have to cling to when the going gets rough on the spiritual path, so to speak. If you have that interior life, if you have that ability to interiorize and to there find that relationship with God and Guru and your real self, your real nature, then there is no test, there is no difficulty, there is no amount of delusion that can shake you from the spiritual path and from your spiritual striving. Because that interior life becomes the only thing that is real to you. Then you are able to live and move and have your being in this world, seeing it as the Blessed Master said, seeing it just as the dream or the drama of God. Those who think it real, to them it is a nightmare. Those who know it as a dream know how to live and behave, to react so that this dream, through their instrumentality, can be made a little more beautiful, a little more peaceful. You can alleviate the nightmare in some other suffering, struggling soul by your own understanding, by your own example. That is what the spiritual life is all about, getting away from the unreal and getting back to the real. And the only place that you find the real is in that interior life, in that interior relationship. But when you establish that relationship, as that becomes more real to you, you realize how much more difficult it is to speak about it, because you do lose something of that sweet relationship with God. Because everybody, in the ultimate sense, has to walk the spiritual path alone. Guru is there to guide. Guru is there to drop both of his hands. If you put up one hand and ask him to help you, he will help. Your spiritual companions, your spiritual friends, are there to encourage through their love and understanding and their example. The sadhana that the guru gives is there to show the way, to give you strength, to keep you from error. But the walking, the actual accomplishment on the spiritual path, is a very solitary one. And each person's relationship with God, each devotee's relationship with God, is absolutely unique. It is unique with that devotee. Yes, there can be similarities of spiritual experience. Everyone can see the same spiritual eye. Everyone can hear the same Om sound. Everyone can feel the same love or perceive the same beauty, experience the same divine realizations of truth from God. But still, their relationship with God as devotee and beloved, as devotee and Lord, each person's relationship is unique. It can't be for another one. And that is the part that becomes very personal. That is the part that becomes most real. That is the part which you should not share with others, lest you lose some of the sweetness of the special grace, the special blessing that God gives, perhaps singularly, to you alone. The beauty of our relationship with God and with Guru, I think, is this uniqueness for each one of us. This is the story of Krishna, that in playing with the gopis, each one became jealous because they wanted Krishna by their side. Each one became jealous because they wanted the special attention. They wanted the special affection of the Lord with them. And in that form, he could be with only one at a time. So it is said that one day, as Krishna was dancing in divine ecstasy with the gopis, and there was this wish on the part of each but I want him by my side, that he took many forms, and he danced with each one at the same time, and each one had that singular experience, he is mine alone. That is what is so beautiful about God, because that relationship is there. For each one of us, he is ours, absolutely alone. We don't have to, in that sense, share him with any other being. What we feel for God and what he feels for us, that is something unique with our own soul, with our own relationship with him. And it is perfect and complete with each single individual, as perfect and complete as it is unique.